from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois' stay-at-home extension is being contested again. Another state lawmaker is taking Governor Pritzker to court, saying he cannot force us to stay home.
We've got to find a way to make sure that the taxpayers of this state don't lose everything.
You know, we're in the business here of keeping people safe and healthy. That's what the stay-at-home order has been about. And I just think that lawsuit is just another attempt at grandstanding.
Alena Church plans to defy Governor J.B. Pritzker's stay-at-home order extension by holding in-person services this Sunday. On top of that, the church is suing the governor and Stevenson County.
Pastor Stephen Cassell says he and his congregation feel personally targeted by the stay-at-home order.
I'm not some political activist. I'm not, you know, some rabble-rouser, some rebellious guy. I just want to have an opportunity to preach the gospel.
We've asked everybody to do the right thing, and as I say, parishioners and their pastors really have done the right thing across the state. So, you know, this person is, it's a bit of an outlier, but everybody has the right to sue.
Governor J.B. Pritzker dealing with the coronavirus, now dealing with some lawsuits as well. First, it was State Representative Darren Bailey of Southern Illinois, then John Cabello from Northern Illinois, both Republicans, and a church pastor from Lena, Steve Cassell. You heard him there. He's filed a federal suit, all of those challenging the stay-at-home order, which is now in effect, for another month. We'll be discussing that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel is practicing social distancing from his home. We have Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Joining us as well is NPR Illinois reporter Sam Dunklaw. And our guest this week is Greg Hines. He writes about politics and government for Crane Chicago Business. And Greg, it's always good to have you on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, guys.
Sam, I'm going to go to you first. Let's start at the beginning, because there was a lot of legal wrangling going on this week. I mentioned Representative Darren Bailey filed a lawsuit in Clay County. Now, if you're not sure where that is, it's not far from Vandalia, Effingham, that part of the state. A judge ruled in his favor this week. What was Representative Bailey trying to do here as far as what was the argument he was making, and what was the ruling? How did that go?
Yeah, much of the argument that Representative Bailey of Zena was making was that in essence, the governor was overextending the use of his emergency powers. Now, as most of us know, the governors in any state have an ability to be able to exercise emergency authority during times of, emergency, of crisis. We see that typically in state disaster proclamations, say, for spring flooding along the Mississippi River. Granted, the situation that we're in now is rather unprecedented, but the governor and the executive branch have followed the similar protocols in issuing state disaster proclamations, executive orders to combat the spread of the new coronavirus. Representative Bailey contested in Clay County Court that the governor should not have extended particularly his stay-at-home order into another month. As we sit here and record this show, the new stay-at-home order has just taken effect. It will be in effect through the end of May. But Representative Bailey says, you know, the governor should not have been able to do that. The legislature should have weighed in on that. That was one of the claims that he was making, and a judge largely agreed with that. The transcript, as I've been reading, was rather raucous. The judge had essentially said that extending the stay-at-home order and the governor's continued use of emergency powers without the legislature sort of chiming in was a trampling of the Constitution, that it was limiting residents of the state from exercising their free rights as citizens. The attorney general, of course, to no surprise, has appealed that decision. He has directly asked the state Supreme Court to weigh in on that issue because not only, Sean, do we have this lawsuit contending with Governor Pritzker's executive power, we also have a lawsuit from Representative John Cabello of McChesney Park up by the Rockford area, who's contending a similar thing but would like all citizens of the state of Illinois to be released from the stay-at-home order. And now, of course, as you heard in the opening, a church in Lena is suing over a right to assemble. So with lawsuits on multiple prongs, the Attorney General feels as though the state Supreme Court has every reason to sort of chime in on this and put the matter to bed.
Well, and you mentioned Bailey. His lawsuit was the one that only applies to himself. That ruling only applies to Representative Bailey. But then John Cabello, a Republican House member, decided then, as you said, to file on behalf of all of the taxpayers of the state, all the residents of the state. Greg, when I hear this, you know, I think to myself, is this anything for Pritzker to really worry about here? I know the courts are going to weigh in. You can get a judge anywhere to, you know, to sometimes agree with somebody on an issue. But do they have a point? Is this going to be a problem for Pritzker?
Well, there's a legal part of this, and there's a political part of this, and a social part of it. Let me start with the legal part. I think you're probably right that I'm not an expert in this field, but governors have powers to do things in emergencies. This seems pretty clear in the law, and this is clearly an emergency. But interestingly, although Pritzker hasn't backed off on this one, he did. There was a second action announced yesterday in which a small church from Northwest Illinois sued the governor and claimed that, hey, by what logic do you deem liquor stores to be essential, but people can't go and practice their religion? Well, he kind of blinked overnight. He tinkered with the executive order and made it clear that, well, churches can open their doors and can take in congregants so long as they practice social distancing and they limit crowds to 10 people at a time. His people haven't really explained that, but I think they may have been concerned about losing that because the courts seem these days to particularly bend over backwards to preserve religious rights. Now, that kind of plays into the larger debate that is unrolling here, which is how long can you keep people locked in place? Even if you can do it legally, at a certain point, the citizenry is just going to say, no, I'm not going to cooperate. And what are you going to do, send out cops and arrest them? He said, we don't want to do that. He says, hey, we're not doing that. But people are growing more and more anxious, even as the numbers from the virus continue to go up. So there's going to be a lot of tension here in any number of levels between civil liberties and public health. And it's not just going to be a legal dispute. It's going to play out in a bunch of other arenas, too.
Charlie, we're not judges. We're certainly not attorneys either. But in your mind and from what you've read of the different statutes, you know, is the governor on solid legal footing with what he's trying to do?
Yeah, I think he is. The basic argument is the law says the governor can do this for 30 days, and it doesn't say specifically after that whether he can do it for another 30 days or he can't. And Bailey's argument is that he can't do it for another 30 days without the legislature approving. I tend to agree with the governor that in an emergency, you can renew that. And as a matter of fact, as has been mentioned, prior governors pretty frequently in recent years, because of the heavy flooding along the Illinois, the Mississippi, other rivers in downstate Illinois, they've declared disasters, and they've done it for multiple times to deal with the flooding problems. So I think there's precedent for him to be able to do that. And I think the polls suggest that the majority of people agree in Illinois. And it's not like you're being quarantined, that you're being locked up, you can't exercise your liberties. I mean, if you think about it, I'm home because I want to be home and because my kids tell me to. But I take a walk every day. If I wanted to, I could go to the store. If I wanted to, I could. You could go play golf even, not that I'm a golfer. But there are always limits on somebody's, what would you say, free exercise. For example, if I wanted to, on a lark, strip naked and run around the block, that's against the law. I can't argue, well, I have this free exercise. I should be able to do that. That's baloney. Mm-hmm. So I think the people that making it sound like you're in some kind of concentration camp, I think they're exaggerating. And I think most people reasonably agree with what the governor is trying to do. The difficulty is it's not that people always know that they are carrying this coronavirus. They can go into a setting, for example, in a church, a large congregation. You're sitting there, you think you're okay, and unbeknownst to you, you're passing this virus on to everybody around you, who then go home to their families, go to their workplaces. So to me, it makes a lot of sense, and I think people agree with it. And another point is, and I've said this before, I'm not sure I'm going to be the first guy in line to go to the movie theater once this thing gets lifted.
Mm-hmm. Well, Greg, let me go back to something we were talking about earlier when it comes to these orders that the governor puts out. Now, he's having these daily briefings, and, you know, I've been listening to almost all of them, and we have gone from a point about a month ago where we're very concerned about this spike in cases, the curve that they kept talking about trying to bend, and the overrunning of hospital beds, ICU beds, ventilators. The governor has now, you know, indicated, like, for example, McCormick Place, that they're not going to need as many of those beds, they think, as they once did. And is he a victim of his own success a little bit here?
Well, I think you make a good point. A lot of the rationale that was made publicly for the stay in place and the shelter orders was that, oh my goodness, we could be overwhelmed and the situation could be like it was in New York, where you could turn on TV and look at pictures of people dying in hospital corridors because there wasn't beds for them. That clearly isn't going to happen unless everything changes. The numbers have flattened. They're not going down, but it appears that, cross your fingers, there's not going to be a problem with hospital capacity or whatever. But in telling people, stay home, don't do what you want to do, you're kind of trying to repress human nature after a while. And certainly economically, consequences of closure, which weren't intended, but they're inevitable, with people losing their income, that over time becomes a greater and greater concern. And you add on top of that the fact that this virus doesn't seem to affect every age group and every section of the city, of the state, equally. It's concentrated up in the Chicago area. It's particularly concentrated among minority groups. It's especially concentrated in elderly people and people who have underlying health conditions. One statistic here, in the city of Chicago, 94% of the people who died so far, 94% have underlying health conditions. That reality is starting to get appreciated by the general population, and increasingly, I think, given this human nature to want to get out, people are going to start to ask, hey, well, this affects somebody else. Why should I have to do this? And there's good medical reasons for it. But people then are going to point to go back to your point, but to McCormick Place and the situation. Hospital says, see, it's not so bad, so let me out. I don't think those tensions are going to decrease with time. I think they're only going to increase until either the governor declare success, the numbers are low enough to reopen, or people just say, I'm not going to comply anymore.
Well, let me go back, Sam, to that point as well. On the governor, he has addressed this issue as far as, you know, the areas that don't see as many cases, you know, maybe more of these rural areas where they're possibly not quite as concerned about it, not seeing the numbers go up the way that we are seeing in Chicago, at least. What is the governor saying about that?
You know, in the last week or so, because of arguments like that have been made in these lawsuits, and largely a little bit more because of arguments made that the state could do a regional approach to reopening the economy, as in those cases or, you know, those counties that aren't seeing as many cases, that aren't seeing as many deaths in comparison to the more urban areas of the state, could theoretically open sooner than those that are still experiencing much of the you know, pandemic disaster. His response to that has been, well, the virus doesn't necessarily choose where it wants to spread around, where it wants to affect people. And I think part of that hesitation is due to the fact that in rural areas, especially in some of the more remote areas where it can be difficult to get to a hospital, I should know, I'm from a rural area in Illinois where my hospital is 15 miles away. I think the fear that state officials have is that if the economy opens up sooner in those areas than others, those people who may or may not be asymptomatic carriers could start spreading it around to others. It's worth noting, too, that if you look at some of the data, let's just take Lee County, for example, where I'm from. There have only been 24 cases of coronavirus reported so far throughout this whole thing. But if you take that on a per 100,000 basis, you're talking about 69 cases per 100,000. As in, you know, sure, there may not be as many cases in sheer numbers in these rural areas, but it certainly affects more people per capita in those places. So the comparison might, on a data point at least, not be very fair. So I think the governor has increasingly shown signs that he might be willing to consider that. Some Republican members of the General Assembly have suggested doing so. In fact, this week, Republican Congressman Rodney Davis encouraged the governor to sit down with those people to think about a regional reopening. But I think at the same time, he's still trying to toe this line of until a vaccine is safely out there, until cases across the state begin to descend in quite a noticeable way, we're not really open to considering that approach.
Charlie, let's say I live in southern Illinois, which I have at one point. If Missouri is open and I'm only a few minutes from the Missouri border, I could go to St. Louis. Or if Indiana decides, you know, to open things up and I could go over there or these other states, does it make sense for Illinois to be, to use the governor's term earlier, an outlier, to be the lone state that is shut down if I can just, you know, cross right over the border and do whatever I want to do?
Well, I would say it does, because the fact that maybe the governor of Missouri is a little more lackadaisical and the governor of Iowa is totally irresponsible compared to our governor, that doesn't mean that we should say, okay, these people are deciding we don't need to wear seatbelts, so what the heck? We're not going to wear seatbelts in Illinois either. Plus, if I'm not mistaken, St. Louis, the city, is still locked down, and things are limited. And if you look at just the number of cases in a county, as Sam mentioned, that really doesn't tell you very much. You need to look at the population, and as a matter of fact, if you look at the cases per 1,000 or 10,000, whatever the metric is, a couple of downstate counties are in the top five in the state of Illinois, and one of them, I believe Jasper County, has a higher proportion of cases than Cook County. Part of the difficulty, as also was mentioned, is that in some of these downstate areas, you don't have the kind of hospital facilities you do. Here in Springfield, we're lucky. We have two excellent hospitals. We have St. John's, we have Memorial. And when you read the reports from the Sangamon County Health Department, they are bringing in residents from all the surrounding counties into Springfield because of the quality of care that we have here. And in some of the rural areas, you don't have that hospital access. And so you also have more elderly people in nursing homes. Some of the worst outbreaks have come in nursing homes downstate. So I think it makes sense to keep going this route. And the governor is opening it up to where now stores can sell stuff online for people to come in and pick up. Or I guess you could call and order, you know, a couch from somewhere and have it delivered to your home. So that is a modification. So I think if we can continue to hold down the increase and ultimately get it to drop, then things will open up. And I would point out, too, that this is probably what, at this point, it was like 6 weeks ago, at one of the governor's initial press conferences on this, there was a doctor from the University of Chicago Medicine named Emily Landon, and who she made it very dramatically, extreme restrictions may seem in the end a little anticlimactic, because it's really hard to feel like you're saving the world when you're watching Netflix from your couch. But if we do the right thing, if we do this right, nothing happens. Yeah, a successful shelter in place means that you're going to feel like it was all for nothing. And you'd be right, because nothing means that nothing happened to your family. And that's what we're going for here. And this came at a time when the state of Illinois had a total of 585 cases and 5 deaths in 25 counties. So the point is, yeah, we're starting to wonder, gee, did we really need to put up all those beds at McCormick Place? No. Thank the Lord, we really wound up not having to use them. We should be happy about that, not be second-guessing, well, maybe we should have not done that. I guess I'm one who believes in erring on the side of caution.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Sam Dunklaw, Charlie Wheeler, and our guest this week is Greg Hines with Kring Chicago Business. Let me turn our attention to some other arguments that are being made, and we touched on it a little bit, and that was the fact that some people think the legislature should come back and get more involved and possibly meet in some way. Greg, there are some challenges when it comes to how to make that happen. You've written about that. What are those challenges?
Well, it's a question of basic safety. I mean, you know, when the General Assembly meets, when the Senate meets, for instance, yes, there's technically only 59 senators, but there's a bunch of staffers, there's lobbyists, there's reporters, there's interested citizens. I mean, when the General Assembly meets and on a typical day in the Capitol, there's, you know, thousands of people in the building. Well, you know, having thousands of people in one building is not what we're supposed to be doing now. It's kind of antithetical. But, you know, but at the same time, democracy doesn't work very well, ultimately, if you have a strong chief of executive with no oversight. And this is not aimed at Pritzker. No, I don't trust any governor or any president to have unilateral authority forever. I mean, that's what a king is or an emperor is. I mean, that's not our system of government. So somehow we've got to get the General Assembly back in here to do certain legal things like pass a budget and pass a new Medicaid system to get money from Washington, but just to perform basic oversight and ask the kinds of questions and do the kinds of things that a good legislature does. All that would suggest that maybe the way out here is to meet remotely. Chicago City Council's had a couple remote meetings by Zoom. They've been rather interesting, but they seem to have worked. To do that, though, the consensus seems to be that you have to bring everybody back to Springfield at least for a day and pass a law that says you can do that. And I will say this has become a little partisan in the sense that the Republicans are making some charges that may or may not be true, but I do think they have a point that that Mike Madigan, the Speaker of the House, probably prefers not to have a lot of people looking over his shoulder. He likes to leave mushrooms in his state, and he just assumed that the governor, with a little prompt, with a little help behind the scenes from the four tops, the leaders of the two chambers, tell him what to do without everybody getting together. Sooner or later, we're going to have to figure this out, though. We have to have a legislature that meets. We just have to.
And Sam, well, I would, Charlie.
Add something, though. The notion of bringing all the people together at once, I think, is goofy. And the way around it, in my mind, would be to do all the committee work through Zoom or through some other social media, have it accessible to the public, and get everything laid out, work out your agreements among the political parties and among the legislature and the governor, have everything ready and set to go, have a perfunctory session to advance bills to pass each stage, and then open the roll call. And over the course of a day or two, bring members in a few at a time with social distancing and face masks to do an oral roll call to pass the required legislation.
Yeah, that would certainly be better than not meeting at all. I agree with you, Charlie.
Oh, yeah. And to me, it makes more sense than trying, even for a brief period, to get everybody, you know, all 118 House members, all 59 senators in their respective chambers all at the same time.
But even that's just a temporary patchwork. I mean, because you know, you lose something when everybody reads remotely. You don't know who's listening and who's at least in the chamber where they can follow the debate. But I agree with you. We need to do something, and that could be a step in that direction.
And Sam, there's nothing that's really pressing to the level maybe of having them back immediately. But as Greg mentioned, budgets, things of that nature. A lot of people do want to get back and get to work.
Yeah, the budget being probably one of the key ones. As the federal government is weighing whether or not, you know, how exactly to send money to keep state governments like ours solvent, the state of Illinois has to consider, well, with the money that we have, how are we going to be able to do things like agency transfers and sending money to groups like school districts, for example. Those are all pretty key things. But something that keeps coming back into my mind, even though I've just been observing the State House for a few years, I've heard it repeated over and over again, you would be surprised what the legislature could get done in just a couple of days. To Charlie's point about remote meeting, my understanding is that both the Senate and House are meeting remotely, at least for working groups, to try to figure out what issues ought to be on the docket, so-called, what legislative priorities need to take precedent over others for when the legislature does come back in. And at the same time, I've also heard of legislatures coming and meeting to remote, to meet and to vote in person, in that one or two members will come into the chamber at a time and vote and leave, and then you'll do the same thing for the next group of lawmakers, and so on and so forth until the votes are cast. Now, yes, that takes a lot longer, in order to complete, but it is perhaps another way that the state legislature could file in to vote in person while maintaining social distancing guidelines.
And Greg, just about 30 seconds left here or so, but I want to mention this because you've written about it as well, and that is there is a big plan for borrowing some money out there that the Pritzker administration may be pushing. What's that about? What are they looking to do with it?
They're looking for $2.2 billion, some of which would go for typical kind of capital money in the borrowing is routine, but about half of it would go to shore up the state's liquidity. Right now, there's a lot of bills coming in, but there's not a lot of money coming in, and they need to be able to do that. This is kind of a short-term fix in anticipation of that. They hope, cross their fingers, that Washington rides to the rescue and Trump backs down and gets this big help that it and other states are seeking. We'll see.
All right. Let's go to our notes from the field. Charlie, let's go to you first.
Well, there was an audit report issued earlier this week by Illinois Auditor General Frank Maltino that found the former Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library Museum Director Alan Lowell improperly loaned the state's copy, an original copy of the Gettysburg Address, to talk show host Glenn Beck and his company and sent it to Texas for a temporary pop-up museum. Both Lowell and the former chief operating officer also got a free trip to Texas. They both resigned under scrutiny, and the chief operating officer, Michael Little, later began working with Beck's company. And this kind of reinforces findings made in a 2019 Executive Inspector General's report.
Sam?
Sean, the famous lion sculptures outside of the Art Institute in Chicago, famous for wearing different types of headgear to celebrate all kinds of things, are among the statues that have donned new face masks in an effort to promote mask wearing among the public now that the state is about to set into another stay-at-home order, more social distancing happening. But as the Sun-Times reported today, one of the two lions had their masks stolen. My understanding is that the city will be putting up a new masks, but, PPE is scarce, folks. Don't go coughing in their direction right now.
All right, and Greg.
My note for the field is personal. Unlike just about anybody else, I've been commuting downtown. I'm recording this from my desk, but it is like there was a science fiction movie couple of decades ago about somebody wakes up in the morning and they're the only person left on Earth and all the other people are gone. It's kind of like that. I have this whole a whole floor of a skyscraper all to myself except for the cleaning person who comes in at the end of the day. There's a guard downstairs with a big bottle of disinfectant. It's a definitely strange times, folks.
And nobody would bother you but us, I guess. So, all right. That's all of our time for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and Greg Hines of Crane Chicago Business. And you can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.